a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donald Kavanagh standing in for Greg on the programme this morning. It's a Friday, which means we bookend the programme with two really, really important sectors. We start with our review of the week with three very important guests. We'll introduce you to those in just a moment. And we end the programme with an hour's entertainment. Michael Liddy in studio as usual. But we don't have Fionnuala with us today. We're instead joined by Conor Malone, the manager of the Ballor Theatre in Ballybuffet. And they'll be previewing some entertainment on stage and on screen, both big and small, and we'll be having conversation. And you can be sure when Liddy, Malone and Kavanagh get together in the same conversation, there is going to be a bit of crack and a bit of banter, so that's something to look forward to. Also, of course, and most importantly, we want to hear you, your views. We want to hear what your priorities are on this Friday morning. It's the 17th of February in the year 2023. What are you thinking about? What are your priorities today? What do you want to hear discussed? You can text us on 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can call us on 074 91 25000 or you can use social media and get in touch with us that way. It's at Highland Radio on Twitter. It's Highland Hub on Facebook. Comments at highlandradio.com if you want to use email. And as we always say, if you want to write to the show, and some people do like to sit down and write a letter, you can contact us that way. 9 till noon show, Highland Radio, Pine Hill, Mountaintop, Letterkenny, County Donegal. But the reality is you write Highland Radio, Letterkenny on an envelope, it'll get here, you can be assured of that. Right, without further ado, let's go to our Friday panel. Delighted to say that I am joined by a group of interesting guests this morning. We're joined by Minister Martin Hayden, who is a Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. Minister Hayden, you're very welcome.
Good morning, Donald. Thank you. And good morning to your listeners.
Great to see you. Eamonn McGuinness, no stranger to this, slot manager of the Martin Donegal and always one to share her opinions. Eamonn, a very good morning to you. Glad you're with us this morning.
Thanks very much for having me, Donald.
And Dr. Kieran O'Farrey, no stranger to the airwaves, GP in Donegal and obviously one who's keeping abreast of the news. Kieran, very good morning to you.
Morning, Donald. How are you doing?
Very well, indeed. I want to start, actually, and I know we all have some briefing notes, but we've had a bit of interesting news breaking overnight, and that is that Rishi Sunak, the British Prime Minister, has announced that he does believe there is a deal there that the DUP can get behind with regards to resolving issues with the Northern Ireland Protocol. Certainly the EU and the UK seem to be happy. The big imponderable here now is, will the DUP accept what's been done? Minister of State Martin Hayden, I want to go to you first, Martin, and just ask, are you confident now that we've had this announcement from Rishi Sunak? Do you believe this is the breakthrough that we've been waiting for?
Well, I'm pretty hopeful, to be honest, because I think the most helpful thing that has happened in the last few months has been the type of radio silence that we've had. You know, we know ourselves, been far too much rhetoric, broadcast over the media, where everyone's positions, from people in Northern Ireland to the UK to across Europe and ourselves, trying to be, honest brokers in this, have been trying to dial down the rhetoric, because everyone was talking themselves into very hard positions. And for any compromise to be reached, that's a very difficult space to be in. So I think it's been really helpful, the time and the space that has been afforded for people to have negotiations quietly away from the scenes. And the mood music is good, but, the Taoiseach has said that there is more to be done here, and more work to go. And I don't believe we're at a final point of an agreement, but I do think progress has been able to be made, and I think the fact that it's done away from that megaphone diplomacy has been actually really helpful.
You and Minister Charlie McConnell have obviously been working an awful lot on the whole issues of Brexit and the issues that come from that. The cross-border trade, obviously very important in terms of livestock and other farm produce. So from your point of view, the marine as well, of course, a very important element of Irish industry and Irish exporting. And from that point of view, from yourself and Charlie McConnell's point of view, it's going to be important to get those north-south institutions back up and running. I'm sure you want to sit down with your partners in Stormont, with your counterparts there, and discuss how better to expedite trade, how better to do deals. They want to do business, you want to do business. Hopefully that's the vehicle that will allow you to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no better example than the area of agriculture and our agri-food industry that is worth so much money to our rural economy, not just for the farmers in Donegal, but all of the spin-off money that's spent in our rural economy because of the economic activity from agriculture and our agri-food sector. So, there's nowhere that's more probably prevalent than in Donegal, and Charlie gets that as well as I do and my colleagues across government, that, we want to have a functioning executive in Stormont. We want to have a minister for agriculture minister that we can sit down with and trash through issues and work on cross-border initiatives like all of our ministerial colleagues do in all the different departments, whether it's in the area of health or education. Mm-hmm. There's so many synergies and so many challenges for us to face together, and we're better in working these together. So we're very hopeful we continue to do our work. You know, my colleagues in foreign affairs and in the different departments, obviously Leo Varadkar's Taoiseach is keeping a very close eye on this as well, and you can be sure himself and Rishi Sunak are in close contact too, to make sure that we get a resolution over the line that everyone can deal with. And what we've been always looking for in terms of our place within Europe was making sure that Europe had the closest possible working relationship with Great Britain afterwards, because ultimately that's to our benefit here on this island.
Eamonn McGuinness, as someone who is literally on the coalface, we've heard the political view from Martin Hayden. From your point of view, as someone who is, as we say, on the coalface, working in agriculture and on the trade side every day of the week, how important is this to you?
It's
extremely important cycle to the farmers, not just in Donegal, but throughout the country. And we did face a lot of problems, and a lot of changes have come about since Brexit. Thankfully, we're still able to move north and south, but I suppose our exports that were going to England, a lot of challenges have faced the hauliers in moving stock, and that all needs to be sorted out, because it doesn't just affect us trying to export our product out of the country, but it affects an awful lot of products coming down into the Republic. It's something that had to happen. And I would like to, and I know we talk about the EU all, and I know we're a member of the EU, but we really need to push. It's vital to Ireland as a country that we get a resolution to all the difficulties that face us. And that's where I think our focus should be more so on. And I know we're a member of the EU, and you do have to look at that aspect of it. But probably more so important to Ireland than it is any other country in the EU.
Yeah, and I mean, technically, on a geopolitical level, the technical truth is that the relationship between the Republic of Ireland and the UK is exactly the same in an EU context as the relationship between Poland and the UK. Geopolitically, that's the situation. In real life, as you've just said, it's far from the situation. Yeah. In real life, there is a special relationship, and that has got to be recognised and that has got to be acted on, because you cannot say Poland and Ireland are exactly the same, because we're not.
No, well, even for the like of livestock, pedigree livestock, most of our customers would have come from Northern Ireland. Things have just got that more difficult. More regulations have been introduced in moving livestock. Like a lot of our sheep, pedigree sheep, would have been bought in England and taken over. That's all more or less impossible now. And there's a lot of nitty gritty that really needs to, and I'm delighted to see Minister Hayden on this morning. There is a lot of nitty gritty things that need to be sorted to make things, to make it more accessible to move our livestock and sell our livestock. And that goes both ways. It's not just one way.
Yeah. Dr. Kieran O'Farrell, I want to bring you in. A very good morning to you, Kieran. And from a health point of view, we've seen so much cooperation north and south, particularly between LUH and Nathlegavan. We've seen the radiotherapy centre. We've seen huge breakthroughs in cardiac treatment and so on. But for that level of health cooperation to function and to develop, we need to have the Stormont institutions in place. Do you believe this is the way we're going to see that happen, and we're going to see the improvements in health continue?
Yeah, I'm sure it's very frustrating to not see a functional executive there in any moves to get that up and running or beneficial. As you said, we've seen great improvements in healthcare here in the Northwest when we do cooperate across border, and I see for my patients who can now access cancer therapy near to home, whereas before this they were having to spend days in Dublin or Galway or constant travel. People are now able to drive 20 minutes and get their treatment and come home again. So any kind of limitation to that cooperation is terrible, and anything that we can do to build that cooperation is great. Again, with as you mentioned there, with cardiac care, you know, if you have a serious heart attack here in Donegal now, you're brought to Altnagelvin and your treatment is expedited, and that's leading to better outcomes for our patients. So we have to encourage that kind of cooperation, and knowing that we've got now a medical school in Derry is hopefully going to help build that infrastructure in the region, and hopefully improve cooperation between our two health departments as well.
And it does seem that when you have so many conversations about these cross-border developments, you have so many of these conversations and they all always finish with the line, however, in order to get the funding or in order to get this over the line or in order to get this agreed, we need a functioning ministry in Stormont so that there's a Minister of Health in Stormont that can deal with his or her counterpart in the Republic. Martin Hayden said it earlier, he could really do with a counterpart in Stormont that he and Charlie McConnell can talk to bring the policy in. So really and truly, I mean, as you've said, and rightly so, they're in place, it's happening, the NTPF is functioning, all the various cross-border agreements are functioning. But if we're to improve them, if we're to streamline them, and if we're to build on them, we are going to need that North-South ministerial cooperation, North-South ministerial meetings, and the ability for someone in Stormont to sign a piece of paper to make something happen. And hopefully we may be on the cusp of that now, depending on how the DUP react to this deal.
Yeah, and I suppose we saw about the Hayes Law during the week, the frustration in the north that, you know, simple pieces of legislation can't be brought through because there just isn't a functional executive, legislation that most people support that there's a need for. And, you know, there are basic things we hear from healthcare professionals in the north saying that basic things just aren't happening because there isn't the sign off for that. And, you know, looking at the Donegal situation, we are different up here. We're so far away from our centres of excellence in Galway or Dublin. And we've got a major hospital in Alton na Gelvin, and we've got the potential to cooperate and improve healthcare for our patients here in Donegal if we can just cooperate and make sure that we develop the services in the region, which is hopefully to everybody's benefit.
Thank you indeed, Dr. Kieran O'Farrie. We're going to take a short break. Back in a moment with the next point in our discussion. And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show on a Friday morning. We have our Friday panel with us. We have Eamon McGuinness, who is the manager of Donegal Mart. We have Minister Martin Hayden. He's Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. And we also have local GP, Dr. Kieran O'Farrie. Earlier this week, we heard figures from government that showed that rent is rising in Donegal and across the country. Is it time for more universal rent controls and more protection for renters? That's one of the questions that's being asked. I want to go to you first on this, Eamon McGuinness, because obviously rent is one of these issues that, as part of the wider economic discussion, it's being discussed an awful lot. I mean, rent, a lot of people will say that in continental countries there's a lot more emphasis on renting because it's much more embedded in the culture and the protections are there and the arrangements are there and it runs more smoothly. Here we've never really got to grips with rent in a way that's going to suit everybody. I mean, is it a matter of bringing in more rent controls at this stage to try and stem these rising prices?
Definitely we'll have to do something. Thankfully, I wouldn't have a whole lot of experience with it, but what I do have is my son trying to get accommodation for him, and I know an awful lot of parents in the same boat, and it just can't be got. It's not a case of, yes, people renting. A lot of people can't build homes for a number of reasons, can't get planning permissions, can't buy houses, there's no houses to buy. There's an awful lot of problems there as regards it. And then you have availability. Availability is the biggest problem in Donegal. Like, rents have risen by 20% in Donegal in the last year. So, you know, that leads you to believe what is the problem. The problem is availability. And we know because we have more yet refugees probably taking up spaces that would have been more readily available before this. I think there's a lot of things we could have looked at, like rent controls in place, certainly. But we need to ask ourselves, people that have second homes available to them, why are they not renting? And I would have a little bit of experience with that. And I do also know, I speak to a lot of my friends that would have had maybe a second property, and why would you not? They tried Airbnb. There's more obstacles in place than there is incentive for people to do that with a second home or with a home that they have available to them. And I think that we are in a crisis at the minute with properties, and we really need to get to why are people not renting their homes?
It's an interesting one because I had a conversation with a friend who does have a second home and who was renting it. And they told me that they were actually thinking of giving up and getting out of it because they actually felt that. I mean, and they sort of turned that question on its head to me, and they said, well, hang on a tick. Everyone's talking about protecting the renters. There's very few people talking about protecting the landlords. And, you know, it's being discussed as though it's an easy ride for a landlord. Buy a house, give it to someone, rake in the money and sit back and watch the bank account grow. They said it's far, far, far from their actual experience.
It's not even a case of, a lot of people might have been left homes. They might, for loads of different reasons, they have a second home available to them.
Yeah.
And would they see it? Now, the grant scheme that was introduced, you know, all them things really need to be looked at and focused on. And, you know, when I speak to ladies, why they would have been doing, talked about renting their house, they said, you know, there's no tax incentive. You're basically, so whatever you're taking in and the work that you put into renting that property and getting it ready, whether it's long-term or short-term lease, you don't get anything from that because there's no tax incentives. And I think that's what we need to look at. We have to encourage people to rent out these properties. I know down in Killybegs, you know, we're probably in a coastal community and there's a lot of properties that probably could be rented. And they're not. They're sitting idle and empty for most of the year. And these are probably houses that, you know, a lot of people really, really need homes and could be doing with. And I think that's what our government has to look at. Why is that not happening? And we have to do that because we are in a crisis situation. And you see at the rising, like the colleges, like the children, God help them, heading to college and nowhere to stay. What do they do? We hear them stories every year. But I also, and what I would have felt, I was trying to help a wee girl get accommodation last year. She had to travel. She was in Killybegs and she was to travel to Sligo. You know, there was no such thing as doing your courses online. And that's where I think our government also should step in. If you cannot, because of you have no accommodation or no access to getting accommodation wherever you're studying, you should have that where you're allowed to study or do your lectures online. Instead of losing your place. So, there's things
well,
like that.
There's a whole other debate too, because I think people in college, they also want the freedom of going out, meeting new friends, that social interaction in college. You don't want people to miss out on that. And there's an argument that says people have spent way too much time in their bedrooms over the past couple of years. And now more than ever, particularly the young people, now more than ever, it's time for them to get out and live life. Rather than being in a bedroom on a computer.
And a lot of people, they have to defer places.
Yeah.
And I think that was so wrong. And there wasn't really a whole lot of emphasis put on that when it happened. It just happened. And there's so many children who face that have to defer places. And it's probably not going to be any better next year.
Yeah. Minister Martin Hayden, I want to bring you back in on this because obviously this is one of those perennial issues that the government is being faced with, but it does seem to be coming to a head now. From the government point of view and from an administration point of view, is there something you can do to bridge that gap? On the one hand, we're told we need more protection for renters who are facing exorbitant cost rises. On the other hand, we're told landlords have no incentive and people with second homes, if anything, are facing obstacles rather than encouragement when it comes to thinking of renting it out. I mean, there appears to be a sort of an imponderable almost contradiction there, and the government's going to have to find some way to bridge that gap and resolve it.
Yeah, look, and I think the discussion you've had so far this morning kind of touches on the real challenges we have in the housing sector. I think it's a huge cause of frustration for the public because they see housing as something that's fairly simple, just build houses and why do we have this problem? But every action the government takes has knock-on implications, and we have to be really mindful of that. So in our desire to help and assist renters who are having a really tough time, but paying very high rents, having difficulty accessing buildings, and ultimately supply is a key part of that. Driving up supply is really, really important, and that's why going from 20,000 new properties delivered in 2021 to almost 30,000 in 2022 is really important, and we need to keep up that level of delivery over the next number of years to play catch up on those lost years that we had during the crash. But the fact is that, you know, we have measures in place there to support renters. We have the tax credit that is €500 a year that covers 2022 as well as 2023. So a couple who are renting and have been renting from last year into this year are jointly able to claim for 22 and 23 €2,000 in a tax credit that will make a help and support. But back to the point in your discussion here, we have to be really careful that the decisions we make, we have the the measure in place to not allow evictions during these winter emergency months. That has implications as well for people who own properties. And, you know, if we make decisions that ultimately drive more landlords out of the system, that will lead to less supply down the line. So we have had a problem, I think, in the narrative and in discussion. It's really healthy to hear the discussion here this morning, because it's very hard as a government TD to even say anything about landlords without being lambasted, that landlords is some dirty word.
Is there something in the Irish psyche that perhaps goes back to the 19th century even, where landlord equals, oh, bad? That there is almost, that the word landlord almost brings up something that's historic in the Irish psyche. And now in the 21st century, somehow we're still having conversations that are being, if not informed by, at least influenced by what happened in Ireland 200 years ago and longer.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's quite understandable. Our history is relatively recent, you know, in terms of how people are impacted by their history. Anything that happens in the last 100 to 150 years does have an impact on the psyche. And you see it in agriculture. You know, the average field in France is sold about once every 70 years. An average field in Ireland is sold about once every 400 years. We have that connection to land. We have that connection to property. We don't tend to give it up. And we have a negative view of the likes of the term landlord for understandable reasons, because of its historical connotations. But I think you hit on the nub here when you were talking to Eimear with it earlier. The vast majority of people I know, and I think you know as well, who are landlords, if you want, for in term of that description and all that conjures up, they're people who own one other property because maybe they inherited it, maybe they couldn't afford to pay the tax to offset it. You know, they might have bought it as their pension fund during the boom when everyone else was doing it and they thought that was the right thing to do, and now they're in negative equity or they're trying to clear a mortgage. You know, it's not a very fashionable space to be in, but we have to come up with a series of measures that makes sure that supports people who rent those out, because they're an important part of this system. Yes, we have to deliver more supply, that ultimately people who want to own their own home, who are working, you'll have the ability to be able to pay for that down the line. That supply will be there. But for those who want to rent, and it depends on the stage of life you're at, you know, not everybody wants to buy at certain times, particularly I think of people in their 20s, you know, who are at that stage. We need to make sure there's a healthy supply of affordable rentable property, and that works for everybody. Yeah. And the state can't provide all of that. So that's why the private sector is an important part of this. And the measures we take and put in place, you know, we have the rent pressure zones. The one other point I'll just make, and I'll leave it on this point, in terms of the headline figures around rent, when you delve into those DAF reports, while the headline figures of 13% increase on rent are really shocking, they're for new properties. Our rent pressure zones are really working, because people who are in situ and who have been in rental situations for some period of time have only seen an increase of about 3%. Now, it's still 3% on top of increased energy bills and cost of living costs. I completely accept that. But the headline figures, you know, are about new properties, and that's something to bear in mind. So some of the rent controls that we have in place do have a benefit. But the likes of the eviction ban that we have in place, we have, you know, I have constituents who are coming home for after teaching in Dubai or somewhere for a year, presumed to be able to take their own house back, and now they can't, and are struggling to get somewhere to rent themselves. You know, the idea of owning your own home and not being able to take it back after renting it for a year when you thought you could, that doesn't sit right with me either. So we just have to get a balance in the whole relationship between the renter and the homeowner.
Dr. Kieran O'Farrell, I'm sure people are coming in and talking to you every day, and you're hearing stories of people who are under pressure because of things like this. From your own perspective, this whole rent issue is a very important one, I'm sure.
I think the key word that's come up again and again there for me is supply. You know, you can drive around Donegal. I live in Letterkenny. I work in Balbuffet. You know, Minister Hayden talks about an increase in supply, but realistically on the ground, I fail to see any significant level of house building in the county. And I suppose if you're not supplying new homes and our population's increasing, where are people going to live? So unless we're actually building homes for people, I can't see how the situation's going to improve anytime soon. You know, I had a look at DAF there. There's, I think, 20 properties available for rent in Letterkenny. So, you know, as our main town here in Donegal, 20 properties is pretty limited. And most of those are over €1,000 a month. You know, when I was renting about 7 or 8 years ago, I had a three-bedroom house for between €500 and €600 a month. So, you know, prices have gone up, supply has gone down, and that's creating a lot of difficulties.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break. Back in a moment with some more discussion. Don't go away. We're joined by our Friday panel. We have Eimear McGuinness, manager of Donegal Mart. We have Minister Martin Hayden, who's in the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. And we also have Dr. Kieran O'Farrell, based in working in Ballybuffet, living in Letterkenny. We're discussing some of the issues of the day. Just some of your comments that have come in. We were discussing rent just before the break. Caller says, my son is renting in Dublin. The conditions of the room which he can afford is shocking. Yet in Donegal, he'd be paying a mortgage with the rent. He's so grateful to have something. He can't complain. Anything semi-decent is just unaffordable. There are far too many unregistered landlords renting out properties, and it's going unnoticed because people need somewhere and are afraid to speak. And Eamonn McGuinness, I want to bring you in on this actually, because you did say that you recently had the experience of trying to find somewhere for your own son to live, and we went through that with our own son. Now it's 10 years ago since we went through that with our son, and it was hard enough back then. In 2012 it was hard enough. I mean, I can't think what it must be like to try and do it now. I have friends who've been doing it. They managed to get a place in the halls of residence, thankfully, in Galway, but you know, the private market was looking very bleak until they got into the halls. But in terms of the conditions, we're also in a situation now where sometimes people find themselves accepting places in conditions that under normal circumstances you wouldn't look at twice.
You also have a lot of students, because I've been listening to my son's friends and that, where they're sharing, there's some of them sleeping on couches in other properties. And I know you said that parents want their children to go and experience college, but you're after speaking about that man that's after texting into you there. Is he really enjoying his experience? College life experience? You know, and look, as you say, what can we do to, it's a very difficult one. And you'd have to wonder, I suppose that we would go back to the crux of it, where has all the space is gone? You know, we have so many refugees in the country. Sometimes I think, you know, like we, and of course, we need to try and help everybody and do everything we can. But there seems to be, the onus has been put on, and the people that are suffering now are families, normal families, and there's no space for the college. As I say, I thought about the rent, and I did, because I had to, I suppose, last year, and students. And I do think that students should be allowed to do a lot of the courses. Now, I know they will have to be present in college on certain days, but that was something that the colleges should have introduced, that the students could do their courses online or be allowed or given that option. And that was never really tabled, and I couldn't understand why. Like, an awful lot of these things, yes, we talk about them, it's on the media for a few days, it's a frenzy, what are we going to do? And then it's gone and the problem isn't fixed. So going forward, I'd like to think, because we're going to face this again with the next, in September again, the next batch of students, that should be changed and maybe take some of the pressure off them families and them students that are trying to attend college or get their courses done. Like, I know students that have to commute from Killybegs to Sligo, maybe even farther afield, if they have no accommodation, maybe even Galway. That's disgraceful. How can you study and have a normal college life when that's happening and nothing has been done?
Well, we do know now there are regular buses coming from Ballyshannon to Letterkenny in time for first classes at the ATU, and then going back down to Ballyshannon once classes in the ATU finish. They're coming down from Moville to the ATU as well, and they're fairly long journeys for any student to go through. I was actually talking to a friend who's living in Donegal, sort of close enough to the border, but their daughter actually gets a train to Coleraine every day to go to university. And they literally, parent drops the daughter into the station in Derry, train to Coleraine, train back. And, you know, that's the way they're doing it at the moment. Now, they're managing to do some courses online, so they're only doing that maybe 2 days a week. But, I mean, you know, it's an issue across the border as well, it seems. And speaking of cross-border, I want to go to you, Dr. Ciarán O'Farrell, because a caller said, look, we're speaking about this medical school in Derry, so that's going to be some sort of panacea. But they're saying there is no medical school in Derry yet. People have long waiting lists there too. Don't exaggerate what's available in Derry. Ask anyone in Derry how long they have to wait for a doctor or a consultant appointment, and you'll be told it's just as long as you're waiting in Donegal in many cases. So the medical school in Derry, it's something very much for the future, but it isn't going to be the panacea that solves all our ills, is it?
I suppose the benefit that I see in it is that we're training young doctors in the area, so hopefully if they train in the area, if they're from the area, they'll be more likely maybe to stay to work here, to see the benefits of living in the Northwest. And you know, we know the recruitment difficulties here in Letterkenny and across Donegal for healthcare, so I think there is a benefit to having that kind of training in the region, and I don't think it should be understated.
Mm-hmm. And a question that's been directed to yourself, actually, I'm going to put it to you if you don't mind. Would Dr. O'Farrell agree that reporting of 106 incidents of drinks being spiked in 2022 is only a fraction of what the real figure probably is. Do you believe that is the case? And should pubs and clubs be held to account and hold a greater responsibility to stop this from happening?
Yeah, I've seen incidents of it in my own practice, and I know it's a concern for young people going out at the minute, particularly young women, and it is concerning. I suppose I'm not sure what the overall incidence is and how prevalent it is, but I suppose we're hearing more about it, we're seeing more about it, and it seems to be becoming easier for people to do it. And you know, there was some more sinister things last year of people getting injected and hit by needles in nightclubs. So yeah, it's definitely an issue out there, but I'm not sure about the overall prevalence and how serious an issue it is.
I want to bring up the issue of a universal basic income. It's something that Social Justice Ireland and other bodies have been pushing for some time. The Commission on Taxation has been considering it. It released a report in the past couple of days, basically suggesting it would not be the way to go from a government point of view. Social Justice Ireland and Dr. Sean Healy says that's a flawed decision and based on an incorrect reading of the figures. Minister Martin Hayden, one of the legacies of this government could be starting the ball rolling toward a universal basic income. It seems if it's going to follow the Commission of Taxation's advice, the government will not be doing it.
Well, first of all, as I said, I'm very proud to have been part of successive Fine Gael governments where we've laid out on a significant number of changes to areas like minimum wage, where we've seen really significant change over the last 10 years. And if you look at the challenges that are there, like what we've always tried to do is provide leadership, stability and vision throughout this time where we reward work. We reward people who, make the efforts and work hard throughout these times. And you know, the present cost of living crisis is an example of where we've intervened with universal measures for, to recognise that everybody has been impacted by this, but also targeted measures for those the most vulnerable, those on fixed incomes and the like of that. The area of the universal measure, this is something that's been looked at. The basic payment has been looked at by the taxation measure. It's looked at by Social Justice Ireland. But we are moving towards, that living wage. Mm. But, I think where different groups differ on this one is what's the cost, who pays for it, and how much is that cost, and are you rewarding people who are actually working and making those contributions in that area? And that's always going to be a balance for us. But what I would come back to is the ESRI switch model that looks at equity in terms of the progression, how progressive our tax system is, and how fair a society we're in. And, that switch model would reflect very well on budgets that government has, successive governments that we have brought, budgets that we have brought in, about get that balance right, about protecting the most vulnerable in society, those on fixed incomes, those in the poverty trap, but also encouraging enterprises and rewarding people who make the effort, to contribute to the economy.
Your party leader once famously said that he wanted to represent the people who get up early to work, go to work in the morning. And the question, I suppose, was asked at that time, at what cost and at whose expense? And the question really is the job of government, and I suppose you really get into different political models when you start having this discussion, but is the job of government to create the conditions under which a private economy can generate wealth and a rising tide can lift all boats, or is the job of a government to create the social conditions in which everyone has, the basic living conditions and everyone has enough? So is the government's job to be the provider of a social welfare state, or is the government's job to create the conditions under which the economy can provide the same wealth, shall we say?
Well, it's interesting, Donal. I'm up here in Donegal for 2 days, and we had a meeting of the Fine Gael members and along with Fine Gael councillors here in Stranraer last night, where this topic was discussed for some period of time in the context of people's cost of living challenges here in Donegal and over a whole range of issues. But ultimately, what I think government's job is to do, and what I believe we've actually done quite well in successive governments, has been to manage the economy well, back from obviously a position of desolation when the Troika were in here. to a position of balance in our budgets, to a position of significant growth, so much so that we can set aside some of those bonus payments of the corporation tax that we know is not a long-term income stream for us. But to also be able to put in five new permanent measures as recently as January to help with the cost of living crisis, cheaper childcare, permanent changes that will reduce the cost of childcare for people who want to go out and work, higher pensions and welfare, more people on the fuel allowance, really significant changes that our colleague Minister Heather Humphreys brought in on changes to fuel allowance, lower income tax and money back on your rent, and avoiding the cliff edge and those other temporary measures. So it's much broader than just the original point here about universal basic payment. I think what's really important that any government does is that it manages the economy well. And we hear opposition parties talking about how they would spend resources of the state, presuming that they would continue to come in under other leadership. And I think that's to take for granted the prudent management of our economy in recent years. And that's something I'm very proud to have been part of, that we have had the resources there to be able to have those targeted measures, whether it was the supports for business during the pandemic, whether it's the supports for individuals and people now in terms of the cost of living crisis, or the investments that we want to make across the country in our infrastructure. Yeah. You know, I heard news headlines this morning, €24 million of government funding for Donegal roads, those types of key investments that are absolutely critical for people's lives in Donegal. And, you know, that's something I know Joe McHugh talks about regularly up in Dublin as well, that these are the challenges that we face, and we have to try and manage all of those.
But the corollary to that is, and you can certainly hold up figures to say the situation now is better than it was 10 years ago, and we have created the conditions under which this happened. The truth is also, you have figures from Barnardos recently that say that the gap between rich and poor has widened to the extent that it's wider now than it ever was. We have rampant inflation, it seems, at the moment, and though that's hitting on the less well-off more seriously than it is hitting on the better-off. And we have a situation where, yes, we have growing wealth in some areas, but we've growing poverty as well. And the worry is always going to be that you're going to get that widening of the gap between rich and poor, and some parts of society are going to be left completely behind. Eamon McGuinness, I want to bring you in here on this, because, I mean, you've been looking at this situation and looking at the economy and its effects for a long, long time. Your perspective on this, is this government getting it right, or have we got the balance? Do we need to look in another direction?
It is a difficult one. It's not easy solved, but like, the cost of living has increased drastically. When you ask what's a government's job, I think it's the government's job to get the balance right for both. Minister, you're chatting about the economy. I think we've gone probably too much thinking about and pushing the economy forward, and it has, and a great job has been done there. I don't dispute that. But the fact remains is, when you see that report from Barnardos, and if we do not look, you look at the CSO figures, and they show that the Donegal people have the lowest disposable income against Dublin's the highest, Limerick, and I think Cork after that, their city. So, you know, you have to look at that. And you also have to look at normal people. If normal people can't go out and take their kids to the cinema, if they can't go out for dinner, if they can't go away for a night, if they just can't afford it, they don't seem to have that money anymore to do these things. That in effect that's a knock-on effect then onto our economy. And I think that's the point we're missing. That money's not there anymore for people. I know in every house, it's no different from my own house. You don't have, because the cost of living has increased so much. And like, what really rags me is when you think of the energy companies. Well, what is the government, what have they really done to tackle that? They're making millions and billions, and their profits have soared. Insurance companies, their profits have soared. Every one of them, big companies, are getting bigger and bigger, and our people are struggling more and more. So that's where the economy, and looking after and protecting the economy, of course we have to. But I think we just, and it's very hard, I suppose, when you're not in that, it's very hard to understand how people get into that situation so quick. And it does happen so quickly, where they're doing okay and managing okay to not doing okay. And an awful lot of our people in this country have seemed to have come back into that over the last, look at your own ESB bill. I suppose that's all you have to do. And that's just one cost. I know my shopping bill when I went to the shop has doubled, and I'm not buying that indifferent. So, you know, we have to do something on that. Like, and I would like to see the government doing more on the big energy companies and insurance companies and Why are they making so much and everyone else is struggling?
It's interesting. Some prices, wholesale prices went down on the international markets recently, and the energy companies were saying, well, it takes a year for big major changes like that to filter down to the retail prices. Now, it seems to me it's less than a year. It's just marginally less than a year since the Ukraine conflict started. But the Ukraine conflict was blamed very, very quickly for huge rises in prices. And it seems that when it's an adverse rise in price, you know, it goes up immediately to the consumer. If the price starts coming down, it filters down over months.
Yeah, and before that it was COVID. Always a reason.
Yeah,
absolutely. Still making an awful lot of money. Mm.
Let's look at some of the comments that have been coming in. A caller says, stopping council houses being built on people's own land or in local towns, how can they keep up with demand? What do they expect? That so says the caller. Now, we know, for instance, that Donegal County Council recently agreed protocols whereby they can get back into giving people loans and helping people build houses. So hopefully we'll get some small movement on that soon. Caller says, government inviting in the voucher funds was the beginning of the end for Irish people in terms of accommodation. We'll get back to that one in a moment as well. Minister Martin Hayden, if you don't mind, a question now that has come in. I'm going to put this to you and put you maybe something on the spot. Can you ask me, Mr. Hayden, what the department is doing about the amount of heavily in-calf cows that are being slaughtered in factories at the moment? How are department vets letting this happen? Now, I wasn't aware that this was an issue. Have you any perspective on that, Minister?
That's not something that I would be aware of. Yeah. It would be widespread practice. You know, a heavily in-calf cow is very valuable because the Cheshire calf. So economically, I'm not sure why that would be happening besides any other reason. Look, ultimately here, you know, the challenges we face in the agriculture sector are very much similar to what we were talking about earlier in terms of people's cost of living. And
yeah.
Eimear will be well aware from her customers too, there's significant input pressures on costs and stuff. And I recently was at it just struck me from the earlier conversation, I was recently at the Sial Food Fair over in France, the biggest food fair in the world last autumn. And they were talking there about European consumers' pressure on their disposable income and how they're moving away from steak and the roast lamb and the higher value cuts for mince. So, you know, the cost of living conversation we were having earlier, it just struck me mm-hmm. as a point that the high inflation impact on people's quality of life isn't unique to us here in Ireland, obviously, and is a direct result of the Ukrainian crisis.
Yeah, Eimear, the idea of sending in calf cows to the factories, is that something you'd have a perspective on as someone involved in the industry, as it were, at the coalface?
You know, it's at the minute, the dry cow, I suppose, is very valuable. And there's a lot of money to be got for it. Could I see, is it done? I can't imagine the Department of Vets, and I know that we slaughter sheep each week. We do loads of sheep to a factory. And there is a department vet on standby when them sheep arrive for slaughter in the factory and are checked. And if they're lame,
yeah.
there's even complaints made. So that there's a lot of cows been slaughtered in calf, I don't know. I find that, is it maybe once in a, I can't see it happening all the time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to think it would happen all the time. And I'd like to think that that is monitored. But I'm fairly sure from the factory we deal with, everything is monitored at a very high level. So,
And maybe just to clarify that, I have got no reports of that happening. So, you know, I think if it was happening, as has been outlined, I think we would be aware of that and it would be a huge cause of concern. So, and as Eimear has rightly pointed out, we have department vets and officials in every abattoir in the country monitoring what happens. So, you know, we have very clear eyes on welfare in terms of animals, and it's something we take extremely seriously in the Department of Agriculture.
Can I ask you, Minister, that issue about voucher funds came in, and that's always going to be a big discussion, that rather than allowing local people buy houses in local areas, that what's happening is the government's creating the conditions whereby voucher funds are snapping up all the houses and renting them out and effectively moving the opportunity of home ownership away from local people, but also moving the control of housing away from local people in local communities. I mean, can something be done to address that and perhaps do more in terms of putting the homes back in the communities rather than putting them into the control of companies whose job is solely to generate profit?
Yeah, so look, again, it's back to the point about housing, that there are so many different challenges to face. There's no one simple solution. Ultimately here, what we believe in government is the right of people to own their own home, to aspire to own their own home and to try and create the environments where that is achievable and attainable for them. when they wish to do so, and to have the right market conditions for people who only want to rent, and to do that also. A lot of this comes down to supply. And, you know, if you look back 5, 6, 7 years ago, when the government didn't have the spare capacity and cash to be able to build and pump money in, there was a need, you know, for certain housing developments that, you know, won't be built without large, like won't be built by private individuals or small developers. And I'm thinking particularly in built up areas of apartment blocks, which are part of the solution. If you talk about the challenges that Donegal parents have for students going to university and college down the country, you know, in those cities of Galway, Limerick, Cork, Dublin, we need student accommodation, we need apartments, we need those tight, smaller units that aren't for families. They're not economically viable to build in the current situation. So we have to encourage that as a state, and have a way of doing that. But also what we want to do, when I talk about, there was a mention earlier of the vacant properties, you know, the Croí Cónaithe scheme, I think, is a potential game changer here for looking at vacant properties, not just in our town centres, but people will know, and I've seen it as I drove all around Donegal yesterday, you know, like every other county, we have lots of vacant properties out in rural one-off areas, and a €50,000 grant to support and encourage people who are thinking of converting those premises back in to habitable principal primary residence is, again, another approach here, working with our local authorities. And I know that, our Fine Gael councillors that I met with last night here in Donegal were talking about all the challenges that are facing Donegal people in terms of housing and all the different supports that we need to put in place and that we have in place to try and help deliver on that housing to increase the supply, which is ultimately the key to what we do here.
Minister Martin Hayden, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Every time I get to do this show on a Friday, I always comment that this is inevitably the fastest hour of the week, and so it has proven. Eamon McGuinness, manager of the Donegal Marta, thank you very much indeed for your contributions this morning as well, valued as ever. No doubt we'll see you again in the not too distant future. And Dr. Kieran O'Farrey, thanks to you again for your contribution. Kieran, just one point I want to raise with you very briefly before we go, and I want to give you the last word on this. We've seen Letterkenny University Hospital this week confirm the appointment of a new patient liaison coordinator who's going to deal with patients and help any issues as they arise. An important development from your point of view?
Yes, I think so. Anything that makes a patient's journey through healthcare better and easier and improves communication channels for patients has to be welcomed, and I hope it does improve things for patients.
And we wish Angela Maslowski very well indeed in that role. It's a very important one. Now, that's the Friday panel. Thank you very much indeed, as I say, to you, Dr. Kieran, to you, Eimear, and to you, Minister Martin, as well.